Netrunners, and welcome to Shipment from Shiloh, a Netrunner community podcast. I'm Graham.
I'm Dane.
And I'm Chris.
And today we're digging into all the fantastic new IDs that just came out with System Gateway, Nisei's newest set. We're super excited, right?
Yeah.
Oh, so, absolutely.
So I guess this we should introduce it, right? What is System Gateway even? For those who don't know, for those who this might be the first time they're hearing about this crazy game called Netrunner, well, System Gateway is something that Nisei created that is a set designed to help new players get into the game. This is kind of the first time this has happened in Netrunner history, which is maybe a little sad, but also great.
Yeah.
It's so System Gateway, the way that it's like packaged is, it's packaged as two things. A starter set that's comprised of two dual decks, which offers kind of like a low complexity intro to the game, and a deck building kit, which contains more advanced cards that allow those new players, once they've experienced the starter set, played a few games, to get their first experience, their first foray into deck building, including more advanced concepts like viruses and tags and things like that.
Now, this also came out at the same time that Nisei's released what's called System Update. And that can be a little bit confusing because now we have two systems. So what is one system compared to the other? Chris, can you tell us a little bit about what System Update is?
Yeah, so Netrunner started off as a Fantasy Flight Games product. And in an effort to, distance ourselves from any sort of legal, intricacies. What they decided to do was Netrunner is now designed as a game that uses the rules of Android Netrunner. It's compatible with it. So it's not the same thing. However, in the card pool, there are like staples that are kind of considered integral to the way that they want the format of the game to keep going. So System Update 2021, it's a set of over 80 classic Netrunner cards that have been reprinted with updated templating from Nisei, updated rules, and then brand new original art and illustrations. And so it's definitely a really great companion piece if you have System Gateway. So between having System Gateway and System Update, you have a pretty good starting place to get deep into the game.
So to clarify for existing players, I think we would recommend that if you want some fresh cards for your Netrunner collection, you pick up System Gateway. If you still have a lot of your old FFG cards, maybe you skip System Update, unless you're really keen for like the new art and you want all your Nisei cards.
Which you should be keen for.
You should be keen for, because it's
new,
very good.
The new art is phenomenal.
Some of the new art is really incredible.
The Gateway art in particular is outstanding. So what do you guys think? You're new, you try out System Gateway, maybe even just buy the dual decks. I think they're like $21 on NPC or drive-thru cards. After you do that, I think definitely the next thing you do, you decide, I want to try this game more. You buy the deck building pack for another $29. And then that kind of gives you like a little core experience. You can have one runner deck and one corp deck built at a time with that. And then what do you think you buy next if you are brand new to the game? Do you go with some other Nisei product? Do you try to find FFG stuff, or do you do System Update?
You definitely, in my opinion, you start with System Update because, there are staple things. You need economy. This whole game is, credit runner. And, you need those money cards. So that's a great start. And then, I would say the Ashes cycle is an absolute, after that, the next kind of, echelon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that, the way that they designed it, while a little confusing, is perfect because of just of how you described, Graham, in that it's like, if you want to play it, all you need to do, $20, get the starter set, see how you feel. For anybody who bought the core set a long, 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 long time ago owned by FFG, they'll remember that you only got one of some things in your core, and you needed to buy three core sets. Yes. No longer the case.
Nope.
This is a game made by the people for the people. So you will get all of the copies of the cards that you do need.
No, you need three Desperados. That's what you need.
That's what you need. And your last...
three Lemuria code crackers.
Yeah.
Your last Desperado is going to cost you $40. That's
yeah. Yeah.
For the single.
That's, yep. Nope.
Which...
Nope, thanks. I'll take the Nisei route every day.
Even if that was the case, Nisei also says that you're totally fine with proxies. So maybe you want to try it out.
Yeah.
You don't want to buy it off of makeplayingcards.com or whatever, then get a printer and print it out.
Yeah.
And play it that way.
Oh, man. Graham remembered, like, the way that we met. I fell out of the game, and then it was announced that it was ending, and I was like, oh, my God, I missed this game. So I went to FedEx, and I am a Gold Star member there at FedEx. I printed out so many cards. I like seriously. I have boxes and boxes of printouts of proxies.
Hell yeah!
It's great.
It was crazy. It's great. You know. Well, and the nice thing about being able to do proxies is that some of those FFG sets, particularly like the later print runs, they didn't print as many because they were only being printed for like a year. So you can't find them.
Rain and Reverie.
Rain and Reverie is atrocious. Yeah. Don't pay $5,000 for Rain and Reverie. Don't do it.
No, don't ever do that.
Don't do it. It's a trap. Yeah. Cool. So yeah, if you're new, you buy System Gateway. You pick up both parts to it if you want. And then after that, you go System Update. And then probably Ashes Cycle is what I'd recommend next, because there's a special format that is just those three products right now. And that format is called Startup. I almost forgot it. And my best Netrunner memories are small card pool Netrunner memories, because it feels like you're
really
you have to be smart, because you don't have a plethora of strong cards to carry your deck, so you have to make the most of like the key time when you're going to res this Bioroid that no one plays, because but the runner doesn't have as good of econ, so they had to run like third click, and then you res this powerful Bioroid with three subs, and now they have to deal with this massive ice, and they can't pay for the whole thing because they didn't expect it. Like, there's just so many more moments, I think, in small card pool Netrunner. That's my soapbox about it, but I'm very excited about the startup format, and I plan on playing it a bit myself.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely sorry to run over you, but I was gonna say I absolutely am planning on getting a couple extra sets and kind of carrot and stick, you know, friends I identify as possibly Netrunner susceptible, you know, and be like, oh yeah, here's a little Christmas present early. I know it's May, but you know, here's some cards. Let's play.
Perfect.
I like it. I am also gonna get an extra set of Gateway to sleeve up. To teach people and just have that set up for me.
Yeah, exactly. Now that there is light at the end of the tunnel of the pandemic, there is a hope that we will again walk out onto the streets and coalesce with our friends and enjoy good times playing Running Nets. So I am definitely down to teach people and help people play and get more people into the game.
Oh, absolutely.
Cool, guys. Well, this episode, we're going to focus on the runners. And next episode, we're going to dig into the corpse of System Gateway. So, without further ado, let's talk about some runners. First up, we have Rene Lou Arsimon, or possibly Rene Loop Arsimont, depending on how French you're feeling.
I am not very French at all.
I am also not very French, and I appreciate that we should be like multiculturally aware and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the thing about America, though. You never encounter French stuff except for like baguette.
Louisiana.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Louisiana. Yeah.
Ballet. Oh, Louisiana, that's true. That's its own hybrid culture, but it's heavily French. Or if we ever went to Canada, you know. Anyway,
he'd have a great time in Louisiana.
Oh man,
he does. He's savage. So
yeah, he looks like one of those swamp werewolves.
Lou is a party animal. He is a 40-15 ID, which means his minimum deck size is 40. He can have 15 influence of cards from other factions, and his text reads: the first time each turn you trash a card you are accessing, gain a credit and draw a card. And he's sort of like a genetically modified werewolf man.
Yeah, that is a good point to mention. He is a Gmod, so you can have some fun DJ Fenris shenanigans with him.
Yeah.
Oh, this is true. so, yeah, I'm going to pick on Dane. So, Dane, what does this ID want you to, like, focus on?
Well, trashing things. it wants you to blow stuff up, which is exactly what Anarchs want to do. That is what they're good at. They've got a lot of tools in their tool belts to do so. It wants you to disrupt the corporation, find like those linchpin cards. Like maybe they're going to draw a hedge fund, and you know you might not they might not have much money, so you knock it out with an imp or something like that, or use his newfangled console that we'll talk about soon to help you push through. The issue, I think, the only issue anyway. That he might have is going into the late game, whereas in the beginning, when the corp might be struggling to find ice or struggling to find assets, things like that, you can sufficiently cripple the corp by knocking those out right from the R&D, from their hand or whatever. But towards the end of the game, when they're all set up, it's kind of more tough for that to be relevant, I think.
Yeah, Chris, what do you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's one of those things where you know that the instinct is you want to lean into it as hard as you can. You want to be like trashing all day, all the time. It's actually a really good point you brought up, Dane, about Fenris as an interesting way of flexing with him, but not quite using him. I don't know. For me, I mean, the funny thing is too, like trashing all the time to me also screams like freedom.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Kamala, which, you know, yeah, you can't use both.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually am going to, I love deck building challenges and I love like proving wrong. So I'm going to be eager to kind of try to sink my teeth into an idea where I have the kind of constant ability to trash things. Maybe like a Nob Kyrie, imp deck or something.
Sure. So a couple of points that you hit on. We've mentioned DJ Fenris a couple of times. DJ Fenris is a three-cost neutral resource that says you can basically pull a, what is it? It's a Gmod or what other kind of virtual runner or something like that.
I think it's exclusively
out of your
Gmod.
And slap it on the table and you also get their ability. Is it just Gmods?
It's an out-of-faction Gmod, I believe.
Yes.
Okay. So this is, you know, you could get Lou's ability through DJ Fenris in a totally different deck. It's kind of wild. That seems like it could be fun. You also mentioned Freedom Kumala, who lets you, I think once a turn, you can trash a card you access by discarding virus tokens off of your cards equal to the accessed card's cost. So oftentimes...
Right. Instead of the trash cost.
Instead of the trash cost. So sometimes you get like, the corpse got an asset up and it's like 2 to res, but 4 or 5 to trash. Like Jeeves.
Yeah, like Ginger or something ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. So then you can just spend one or two virus tokens, which you often get through virus cards that reward you for running is a common way to get virus tokens. So Freedom also lets you trash a whole lot for sort of free. Yeah. To differentiate that, Loop actually gives you card draw. And one of the things I think that encourages you to do is like, at the end of the game, you're kind of set up, you don't need the card draw. But if you want to benefit from the card draw, you kind of want to be somewhat aggressive and be attacking in like the early to mid game. And so I think he rewards you for that. All the gateway IDs we see are all going to be very interaction focused, which is really nice design. So I don't think any of them really rewards you for just like sitting back, particularly the runners. So we see that here with Lou. We also mentioned a couple of other cards. I think the biggest one is Imp. We were talking about viruses. So Imp is a 2-cost virus program for the Anarchs that comes into play with 2 virus tokens. And when you access a card, you can discard one of the virus tokens to trash the card that you're accessing. It doesn't need to have a trash cost. It could be an operation.
Yep.
Right.
I
mean, there's a couple other ways. Like his console is Carnivore. Which seems really good. And I'll let me explain what Carnivore does, and then I want to hear what you guys think about this. So Carnivore is a console hardware for sort of Lou's signature hardware, signature console. And when you're accessing a card, you can choose to discard two cards from your hand to trash the card that you're accessing. Sort of similar to Imp, except that there's no middleman of virus counters. It's just straight up discard cards out of your hand instead of money, which is a really nice thing to have if you have like a bunch of junk in your hand that you don't really need.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about Imp and Carnivore in Lou?
Oh, I mean, I would say Imp is an absolute must. And it's Carnivore, yeah. And I think Carnivore is, I mean, so, you know, let's back up a little bit. So we're going to talk about the card pool as it stands. You know, an integral part of the Anarch breaker suite are the bin breakers, where, you know, you throw them in the trash and they're ready to go when you need them. And so, I mean, this is an excellent way to flex Carnivore. You got your breakers in hand. Normally you overdraw and pitch. You can use this to just go and like, oh, I'll pitch my bin breakers and trash a card. Win-win.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
And then you gain a credit and draw a card with your ID.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. It, I guess, kind of struck me. Renee came out and Carnivore hadn't been a thing yet, like, as far as spoilers go. So I was just seeing him in this tiny little box, and I was like, well, you play with him Demolisher, obviously. But when I was playing him with the Demolisher, like, the only way that you can consistently trash cards was through Imp. So I couldn't really make much value out of his ability. And it was very clear to me, like, the once per turn Imp thing. Whereas Carnivore plus Imp, or just Carnivore by itself, not really needing to pay a cost, is just so, so great. And paired with other things, for example, Conduit, you can get really deep in a corpse deck by just trashing things that you normally wouldn't be able to trash. So in that way, it kind of feels like Eddie Kim, in a, like, but kind of almost better in a way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good comparison. So I've got an idea for a deck with Renee here that I think would be pretty fun. You mentioned Demolisher as a console.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of fun. I don't think it's really seen very much play, maybe because it costs four to install. It's another Anarch console that does two things. One, it lowers the trash cost of all of the installed corp cards by one. So it just makes everything cheaper to trash. And then the first time you trash a corp card on your turn, you gain a buck. So with Lou, now you're gaining $2, you draw a card, and you might get a discount on the trash cost if you're paying for it in credits. Or maybe you're going to do what I'm going to try to do, which is use Imp combined with Friday Chip. Imp uses virus counters to trash stuff. Friday Chip is a hardware that says when you trash a card, you get a virus counter. And at the start of your turn, you get to move that virus counter off of Friday Chip onto another card, like Imp.
Yeah.
So that's like the little engine that could, that you got rolling. And then I guess, I don't know, you break stuff at that point. I don't really know how to turn that into a winning game plan. I guess you just trash stuff off of R&D to multi-access or something.
Yeah.
Sure.
But that's what I want to try.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, definitely very fun, I think. And I think that one thing that we might just want to confront with him is how impactful will this ID be by itself, right? Just with its stats alone, so 40 deck building size, 15 influence, standard for all of the newer runners here that we're going to talk about today. But like, his ability might not be as great as some of the other ones, but in terms of maybe a more casual setting, very fun to play. Like Graham was going deep into the trash stuff. But at the end of the day, if you're doing that, you're probably not setting up your breakers and doing like maybe objectively more important things, like being able to, you know, get through servers and like kind of do, you have to kind of, I guess, maybe find a flow to breaking things. Like Hippo does a really good job at that. The hardware that once you break the first outermost piece of ice in a turn, you can just remove Hippo from the game to trash that ice, because that is exactly what runners do anyway, right? You're breaking ice. This, you maybe have to go out of your way a little bit. I guess you want to access cards, but there's only a certain percentage of cards that you can actually trash without having to play like an Emperor Carnivore.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the way I kind of feel about it, you know, we were talking about how it might not be as, you know, it's an early game pressure. I mean, I philosophically hate the card, but I mean, it's easy, like Rebirth, you know, like you start as Lou and you go until you're like, okay, I think it's time. I'm going to rebirth into something else that I need,
right.
You know, Omar, EK, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So comparing Lou to other IDs and faction that you have access to right now, if you really want to trash stuff, Freedom is definitely more tried and true, but you can pretty much find very good Freedom decks that are powered by, I don't know, like Imp and Yusuf is one of the virus programs that accumulates a virus token every time you make a successful run.
Mm-hmm.
And like, just that package alone is pretty dominant from a trashing standpoint.
Yeah. Amakua, Leech, / Data Sucker all add to that package, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then you've got, you know, the other thing that Lou does is draw you cards, which is sort of the Hoshiko plan, right? As long as you are...
Yeah.
Hoshiko's another ID. Not going to go into her right now, but essentially if you are running about half of your turns or more, she's going to be drawing you a card every turn. And that's not a very tall ask. You don't even have to trash stuff. You don't have to spend some resource of yours to get the draw.
Yeah.
You just have to run. And that could be just like,
yeah.
I'm going to run Archives to, you know, I'm going to play Dirty Laundry or something, and I'll get some bucks off of Archives, and now I'm triggering Hoshiko. So Renee is sort of in the middle of those two, I think, and I'm not sure that Renee is necessarily good enough to outdo one of the others, but again, I think very fun and certainly very playable.
Yeah. And I'm just gonna lay kind of my final thought here. Don't be like me and make the mistake of playing Stargate in Renee, because that was my first thought about him. And Stargate replaces the access with its own ability. So Lou specifically says it must be a card that you're accessing. So it is a Nambo.
Right.
Do not go there.
Stargate just says, look at these cards, and then choose one to trash.
Right, exactly.
Chris, can you tell us a little bit about our Shaper Runner?
Yes. Our Shaper Runner, I'm really excited about. His name is Tau Salonga. I hope I said that right. He is a telepresence magician. His identity is natural. He is another 40 card deck size, 15 influence. So I think we're seeing a theme here with deck size. His text is, whenever an agenda is stolen or scored, you may swap two installed pieces of ice. I think he's real good.
Really, really cool.
Yeah. Shapers are known for building up these big engines and being very strong in the late game, but they have to spend a lot of time setting up. And they also are known for just being very efficient without necessarily throwing a wrench in the corpse plans. And Tau, uniquely for the Shapers, is very disruptive.
Yeah. Yeah, it can really screw up. I was playing against some today, and I forgot consistently. You know, and especially if, you know, in a rushy meta, oh boy, you're like, I guess all my barriers are right here now.
yeah, for real. It's a very good ability that has a lasting impact on the game because it helps cushion the blow of what would be very scary ice. Like if you have a conduit plan going and they res like an archer or something in front of it, you're just like, next time anybody scores something, it'll just now be on HQ and I won't care about it for the rest of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It really interesting. Again, it encourages interaction, I think, because you get more triggers if you're running early on and stealing some agendas, right? And granted, if it's really early on and the corp only has one piece of ice down, I guess that's less good, but then you're also still scoring points, so, you know, whatever.
Yep.
What does Tau want in his deck? Like, what are some notable cards that you would throw in with him?
Well, his console, for one.
Oh, yeah. His console is... I love it so much.
So cool.
Yeah.
It's like kind of like a baby Haley ability, right? Kind of?
A little bit. So his console is Pantograph, which is a two-cost Shaper console. And whenever an agenda is scored or stolen, you gain a credit, and then you can install a card from your grip. So you get free installs whenever agendas are scored or stolen.
Yeah. Yeah. So good.
Yeah. It's such a, I mean, this is such a control, like, these tools are such a control deck sort of feeling. It's really cool.
Yeah, and, like, again, this is one of those things that you're just, you're playing the game, and the corp is playing the game, and it's just rewarding you for playing the game, right? If you're scoring agendas, you already want to be doing that, and hey, guess what? Now you get to do something that might be beneficial to you. Even if it's on res dice, it's like, kind of a mind game for the corp, because, like, Even if you're just taking your time setting up, kind of like, Grim, what you were saying about, like, maybe this is the only runner that I could see kind of waiting and sitting back, but that's perfect for the Shaper kind of thing, plan. Mm-hmm. Like, do I put my hard ETR ice on my remote, or do I, like, am I expecting them to set up and then, you know, they might swap it or whatever, even not knowing, you know, like, it creates interesting, like, points of thought for both the runner and the corp the whole game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
So one of the things I think about when I see this whenever is, you know, you always have to be careful that a whenever trigger is not too broken. But what I think is really neat is, you know, sometimes you get into deck building and you are thinking about your ideal setup, like, how do I mitigate this and that? And Tao's ability and his console reward both you setting up fast, like you getting and clawing your way forward, or if things are kind of lagging for you, this kind of helps you, like, delay things or even, you know, accelerate your setup. So I feel like, you know, with clever play and clever deck building, like, you can really, you know, have pressure.
So we were able to compare Lu to some other Anarchs because Lu is sort of just an economy ID in a way. It's rewarding you for doing a certain action. So how reliably can you do that action, and how does that stack up against other IDs that are giving you a similar benefit of, like, credits and cards? Tao is pretty unique, and so it's hard for us to compare Tao to Lat or Wu or these other Shaper IDs, because Tao's doing his own thing, and he's doing it in a very disruptive way that I don't think we've really seen from Shapers since, like, Kit in like 2013.
Yeah, I was about to say that. I think Kit is probably the closest you can get, because she does something kind of similar in that she messes with the corpse ability to deal with the runner at the early phase of the game, right? Like, moving into the mid phase of the game, right? Because you kind of, like, to be truly safe from Kit, you have to have your server double iced. Whereas with Tao, it puts a weird distinction on, like, having an odd amount of ice sometimes. Yeah. And you have to think about where stuff is going to be, in that both of these runners care about things that you install on ice, or things like, for example, Egret, is that the one that puts, like, every ice type on an ice, or, like, things like Botulus or, like, Cubone.
Yeah, the one where you pass it. Yeah.
Yeah. All of those things are kind of things that you want to put on ice. If you're going to go that route, you probably want to play one of these two IDs, because you can kind of choose, especially with Tao, where ice goes, and it might work best for that. Even something like Ika. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just feel like he's very flexible.
And I also think he's skill intensive. Like, I think that there's, like, generally just disruptive. Like, oh, you were trying to rush out something and you rushed it out behind a vanilla, but now I put the vanilla on R&D and I can get into R&D for one and I can hammer it with my R&D.
Conduit
access.
Baby.
That's right.
like that is, feels good. But then there's also, like, there's probably some next level plays that, you know, we're not going to see right away until people start combining it with, like, weird stuff. There were just a couple of cards that I thought fit well in Tao.
Yeah.
So first up, Cordyceps is a Shaper virus. Costs 3, so it's kind of expensive. And it comes into play with 2 virus tokens. But when you make a successful run on a central server, you can spend one of those virus tokens to swap a piece of ice on the server you ran with a different installed piece of ice. So it's like Tao on a stick, and you can start to get like a critical mass of disruption. Now, however you are going to monopolize that for your own game, I'm not sure exactly, except that it's just going to really mess with Corp Ice if you can constantly be putting their Anansi on a server that you don't care about right now.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the other one is Gordian Blade, because it's just a very standard run-of-the-mill decoder. It's 4 to install, 2 strength, plus it's 1 credit to pump it for 1 strength and 1 credit to break, but that pump lasts for the whole run. So you could potentially put a bunch of code gates all on the same server, and they're all strength 5 code gates. And so, you know, it's like Slot Machine, Fairchild 3, and something else that's stupid. And so then your Gordian Blade is like, just kidding, I only have to pump once. And you save like 4 credits that way.
Yeah. Even stuff like Atman and Chameleon, like I mentioned, Cubon, just enables more Shaper bullshit, right? Like any form of Shaper, take your pick. You're at the Shaper bullshit buffet and your Tau, you're very happy.
Yeah. As you were speaking, Graham, I was just like, a thought popped into my head of, like, you were talking about Gordian Blade, Gebre Selassie from the Katara cycle, where Host Icebreaker returns to its base strength at the end of each turn rather than the encounter. Like, that's another one. You just find it. Pick your favorite, you know, breaker.
N'Golo would be very good for that, because I think N'Golo starts at strength 2, but it's like $2 for plus 4 strength. So you do that for the whole turn. Maybe if you're doing the kit but it's Tau build, then instead of Cordyceps, you've got in Pelangi, which is going to give code gate to like different things. So that's like N'Golo's ability on a stick, and now you're using Gebre Selassie, N'Golo, and Tau. What are these words? Like, what am I even?
We're far down the Shaper rabbit hole.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rein it in.
DJ Fenris Ketzel.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, is there anything in particular that you guys are going to like try in Tau, like a deck concept?
Oh, well, Graham, I'm glad you asked, Cracks Knuckles. So I have, let's see, I believe the last thing I made was a Tau with Chameleon and Cyber Trooper Talut. Another one I have is I just want whatever I can do to get Conduit online and then Aeneas Informant to just like bad manner gain money in a really nasty way.
So you're using Aeneas Informant to like that's the criminal resource that lets you when you don't trash something, you like reveal it and gain a buck. So you have like 3 Aeneas Informants down and you're like, oh yeah. Did you know that you have a white space coming up on R&D? I'll take $3, please.
Yeah. And with Conduit, I mean, if you can just dig and dig and dig, I mean, buddy, that's like 10, 12, 15 bucks. Like, oh man, that can be so, so, so good. But, you know, contextual. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. Like, I think the Chameleon Talut angle is my first kind of thing I'm thinking about.
Interesting.
I'm just happy to have a very powerful Shaper ability and maybe consistently start winning some games as Shaper.
It's been a while. I like Haley, but it is, I mean, unfortunately, just not an interesting idea. Like, it's powerful, but it's not, you know, the space on it is just you get click compression.
Right. You get 2 installs for 1 click, right? So.
Yeah.
And we're also going to see a new shade of Shaper, because previously Shaper really needed some kind of engine. You needed to be Haley with extra installs so you could sell those installs to Aesops for money. And now we have a whole suite of like very basic Shaper stuff. And I think that's going to help a runner like Tau out. I think it's also going to help Kit out, because Kit always struggled with like, she doesn't have that much influence. So now she can just stay in faction and be like, well, I'm going to put in like these 3 good economy cards and these 2 good draw cards and then some cool N'Golo shenanigans and everything's a code gate now. And like, she can do that now. Before it was like, she was way too broke to do that. So
yeah. She always needed that one card that like did exactly what Tau does throughout the whole game anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Let's move on to our third and final runner. Dane, I think it's your turn to tell us what the runner is. I didn't realize that.
I didn't practice this last name, so I apologize if I butcher it. But this is the criminal runner. Her name is Zaya Sadeghi.
Zaya Sadeghi.
I think that's right.
That sounds good.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
Cool. She's a versatile smuggler. She's got some dope-ass black gloves. She's a cyborg, and her ability reads, whenever a run on HQ or R&D ends, you may gain one credit for each time you accessed a card during that run. Use this ability only once per turn. She's got 40 deck size minimum and 15 influence. And she says, and I quote, I obtain your desire.
Ooh. So it pays you for running Centrals, R&D or HQ.
I like it.
So what does...
Sign me up.
What does Zaya want you to focus on?
Run,
bitch. Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. It's like, yeah. Do it.
And I think, so I guess I got, now that we have like all of the runners kind of, you know, out there explained, I kind of wanted to circle back to just, I think the designs on this are pretty good. They're trying to teach you, you know, what all of these factions kind of ideas are about. You know, Krim is just, Krim is go, go, go. Shaper right. is control, and, you know, Anarch is trash stuff. Like, it's, you know, I think they did a good job of really kind of illustrating, you know, what you should be doing for each faction.
Yeah.
Yeah. And making it feel unique too, right? Like each of them is doing a very different thing, occupying a very different space of what runners can do.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, it makes sense that criminals would get paid for running. That is their motivation for running, is to get data and sell it. Like that's thematically what they're doing. So, you know, Zaya fits really well in that. My only critique against Zaya is that it's a little bit boring. It encourages a criminal archetype that we've seen for a very, very long time. So it doesn't feel as inspired, maybe, as certainly not as much as Tau, and maybe not as much as Lu either.
At least it's now 419.
At least it's not
419. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, don't get me started on that.
Oh, boy.
One of my meta mates is, I mean, just if he can make 419 work, he tries to do 419 headlock, and it's just so frustrating. His goal is to make you click for 3 credits every turn without fail. It's so irritating.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. I like, so I'm going to be honest. I'm not the greatest runner. I like playing Corp a lot more than I like playing runner generally. Mm-hmm. And usually when I reach out to runners, it's like just because like this runner seems easy to learn and like very strong right now. Like I would play like Reg Val and like 419 when he was like really, really at his peak. And like just because it was very straightforward Netrunner. Mm-hmm. So like seeing these IDs imbues in me this really like big excitement to actually play these things rather than just being like, well, this seems strong, so I'm gonna play this.
Yeah.
And these are the cards that you can put in it. Whereas each of these things really wants you to build a deck with like character and like what the faction's supposed to be about, which I'm really excited about. I've never been this excited to play runner before.
And that's awesome.
That's a success. That is a badge of you did it on Nisei's lapel. Like that, you know, you made someone want to run. Yeah. So in terms of like, what does Zaya like lend herself towards? I want to point out that in Netrunner from like a cerebral strategy element, you know, there's discussion of how do you pressure the corpse centrals? That's how do you make running R&D and running HQ matter? And more specifically, how as a runner do you make it hurt for the corp when you hit those? And there are some like cute ways of doing that. A good example is a connection resource for Anarchs called Bagat. And it says, first time you successfully run HQ, the corp trashes the top card of their deck. And it's like, okay, that's disruptive. Maybe there's good stuff that goes in the bin. Maybe it's, you know, maybe there are agendas and it's hard to get those agendas back. So there's a chance you could just go steal them. You know, Bagat definitely encourages the corp to ice up HQ if you have Bagat on the table.
Right.
while there's some cute ways of doing that, I think the most common way to make it hurt when you're running centrals is multi-access, accessing more than one card when you make those runs. And that's where Xayah shines. So she doesn't want you to use that cute stuff. None of this Stargate business. We're going conduit, baby. We're going, I'm going to access five cards at the top of R&D, and I'm going to get paid $5 for it.
Even just a jailbreak. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So jailbreak is a new card. It's a run event that I believe costs zero. Mm-hmm. It's a neutral run event. It says run HQ or R&D. If successful, draw one card, and when you breach the attack server, access one additional card. So it's a good padding.
Xayah gets paid $2 and draws a card. So that's like
far better than any other runner could say about playing that one card in their deck.
Yeah. I think Ken and Xayah are pretty reasonable homes for that card. I think it's probably going to get overshadowed by I don't think Jailbreak is going to make the cut in the greater card pool, but I think it's a fine card and Xayah loves it.
Yeah, I agreed.
I think the big one in Standard is probably Turning Wheel. It's a two-cost neutral resource that says whenever a run ends on HQ or R&D, you get a power counter. And you can spend a pair of power counters to access an additional card during a run. So the idea is that you build up a bunch of these Turning Wheel counters. You make six runs over the course of a couple turns. You save up these six counters. You cash them all in on a R&D run, and you get to access three extra cards for the six counters. So, and crucially, you can like bounce off of ice. So if the outside ice is an end the run, and there's not really like anything else going on, it just says ice wall end the run. You can just run HQ, bounce off of that outside ice, and get a turning wheel counter. You run HQ, let the run end, get a turning wheel counter. So you build up a bunch of counters, and then you cash them all in as Xayah. You get paid sweet, sweet monies.
Yeah, I think that Nisei did a really, really good job at taking multi-access into consideration and kind of maybe wrangling it, not necessarily back, but kind of sideways in a different direction, which is that a lot of multi-access used to work maybe not so intuitively together, in that like you have things like HQ interface and R&D interface, very, very boring cards that you could just stack, and then eventually you just have this 12 credit sync that now you can just hit R&D and access three cards every single time. Whereas now with things like Conduit, with things like even like Red Team, even though it's not necessarily multi-access, it rewards you for running. There's a click action on the card so that it's not like something that you can kind of mindlessly put together with something like Jailbreak or Maker's Eye or something like that. Yeah. You actually need to like initiate the action on the card. So you can't like do Conduit plus Red Team plus Maker's Eye or whatever, you know, like, so you actually have to think about where the run is coming from, which definitely tones down the strength of it, but also makes it more of a choice, right? Like if you're looking at a card like Jailbreak and comparing it to like a Maker's Eye or Legwork, the corp has to think a little bit more about like what the runner is getting out of that. Obviously two accesses, but like they paid, for example, if you're looking at a Maker's Eye or Legwork, they paid two credits for that, and they're seeing three cards. That's obviously a big tax for them if you can keep them out. with Jailbreak, you pay zero for it, you get a card back for it, and you only see two cards, which might not be quite as enticing. So like they've done a really good job with both the runner and the corp making choices in terms of multi-access.
Yes, I agree.
What I was just thinking about with multi-access is, you know, you're talking about how in the past you have like HQ interface or R&D interface where, you know, it's expensive to install, but it's a permanent bonus to it. I like that multi-access is actually kind of more deliberate and more sort of like, you know, you kind of like take your little like miniature stands here and there, right? You know, you access a couple here and there, and it's not really expensive to do. You know, often like a legwork sweep is really, really powerful. You know, Maker's Eye, it can be kind of frustrating sometimes. You know, you'll do deep digs and you might not find anything and you didn't really gain any info. But, you know, I like that the multi-access is very, like, considered and calculated now.
Yeah. Right. Is there anything that Xayah can't do? Like, why would you not pick Xayah, for example?
Well, you can't play her with gang sign. Kind of, well, right?
Yeah, it would be a illegal deck.
You can't just sit back, basically, right?
Yeah.
I guess 419 is better for denial, right? Because there's, you know, it says lose a credit for the corp instead of you gain a credit.
Yeah, right. And he's a link runner. I know that's really important to, you know, high-tier players. I think she is now maybe the only 40-card runner right now, or the only 40-card crim in standard for crim.
I think that's correct. Wrong.
Yeah, so, yeah, you know...
Silhouette's not in here, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She gone.
So, you know, that's something to consider.
So she can do anything. Here's the thing. If you want to play Krim and you don't know what ID to use, just put it in Xayah and see how it goes. And then after you play it with Xayah, you say, is it better for me to add 5 cards to this and play it in 419 or Ken or Steve? Steve would be the other one, I think.
Mm-hmm. Or Az, forgot about him.
Oh yeah, Az, absolutely.
Yeah, Az, the interesting weird hybrid sort of wannabe shaper, but not quite.
Yeah,
that's about right. That's the most accurate description I've heard.
Yeah,
of them,
I accept.
So I wanna try and get my feet wet with Xayah. I feel like it's gonna be a lot of aggro. It's gonna be a lot of Just go. Zoom, zoom.
Zoom, zoom, baby.
Yeah, and I think it's in a more... Even though it's kind of bland by itself, it's definitely more fun, for me anyways, than versing, like, a Leela on the other side of the table. Like, both IDs, I would say, okay, this is going to be a really aggressive game, and I'm going to have to think about, you know, like, when I res things and stuff like that a little bit harder. But, God, Leela...
Leela was so oppressive. I was a big Leela player for a long time.
Oh, God, is just a very different feeling, I guess, sitting across from a Leela player than most other runners.
Yeah.
Whereas Xayah, yes, she's going to be aggressive. Yes, she's going to offer a strong ability, but I'm not going to just be like feel like I'm being oppressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Cool, guys. Well, thanks so much for joining me talking about some of these gateway runners. I'm very excited to give these a test drive. I think Tao is definitely going to see play in standard. I think Xayah can see play in standard. Lu, I think, has got more competition for a standard slot, but is otherwise a very good ID, particularly for startup. I think we'll see a lot of Renee in startup there. And I'm just overall excited.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All these runners have a lot of personality. They like we said earlier, they kind of show their piece of the pie very well. And I think that newer players are going to have a lot of fun playing even Lu. Mostly Lu, probably.
Mostly
because he's blowing stuff up is really fun.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, Chris, Dane, thank you so much for joining me. Guys, what's your usernames? Where can we find you?
I am Cryptogram, ironically, not related at all to Graham.
Well, that's going to be confusing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I'm Heartbeat02, the number 0.
Excellent. You can find us on a Discord near you, right?
Hell yeah.
You can find us at shipmentfromshiloh.podomatic.com. You can shoot me a tweet at GrahamCrackerGo. My username on all things Netrunner is PureFlight. Thanks to Foundation for the amazing theme music, and thanks to you for listening in. That's our show. Join us next time when we talk about the Gateway Corpse on Shipment from Shiloh.